This is Rush to Reason.
You are going to shut your damn yapper and listen for a change, because I got you pegged, sweetheart. You want to take the easy way out because you're scared. And you're scared because if you try and fail, there's only you to blame. Let me break this down for you. Life is scary. Get used to it. There are no magical fixes.
With your host, John Rush.
My advice to you is to do what your parents did. Get a job, sir.
You haven't made everybody equal. You've made them the same, and there's a big difference.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know, you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
Are you crazy?
Am I? Or am I so sane that you just blew your mind?
It's Rush to Reason, brought to you by Absolute Electrical Heating and Air, with your host, John Rush.
All right, and I am your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. Let's get our special guests up right now. Dr. Kelly Victory joining us. Dr. Kelly, welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Good to talk with you as always. Lots going on.
Good to talk to you as well as always. All right, let's get, not doctor, but Mr. Steve House up as well. Steve, welcome. How are you?
Good. You know, every time I hear Kelly on our Thursday calls, I just have a sigh of relief that she's not in jail somewhere. So I'm really happy about that.
As I start many shows or end many of my interviews, Steve, I tell people, for the record, I'm very happy. I'm not depressed at all. I just had the brakes checked on my truck.
Nice.
And I don't own a wood chipper. So just be aware of that. Get that on the record.
That's awesome, yeah. Actually. You know, it's sad. I know we're sort of joking about that, but in a way, Steve, that's not 100% untrue. And you know, we're joking just because otherwise we would be doing something else.
Well, you know, I think we all saw that article this week on the NIH website. Russell Blaylock, or whatever his name was talking about how the government treated physicians and medical professionals during this process. And two thoughts came to mind for me, John. One is the election that just passed. The most important thing, people shouldn't forget this, the most important thing about this election we just had is the governors. Because governors decide what happens in states. The U.S. fails or doesn't fail, in my opinion, depending on how strong states are. So we had some great governors elected who will prevent us from having lockdowns. And the second thing is that people need to realize that what happened, what was in that article on the NIH website, is a strong indication of how bad it can be. And even the quotes this week that we may have more deaths from COVID lockdowns, from cancer and other things that weren't diagnosed than we did from COVID itself. There's a lot to be learned here.
Yeah, and a lot to unpack. And for all of you listening, it's why we have a two-hour special today. So Dr. Kelly Victory and Steve House will both be with us 2 hours, and partly why we did that as well. If you're listening to us on Thanksgiving Day as well, thank you, because we put this together so we've had some good content for a lot of you that will be listening on Thanksgiving. A lot of you that are traveling through, potentially even, that are driving right now, maybe hearing us for the very first time. Dr. Kelly, really quick, for those that might be hearing us for the first time on Thanksgiving, give them your credentials really quick.
Well, I'm a trauma and emergency physician by training, did that for many, many years. I became a mass casualty and disaster specialist and spent the last 20 years really doing that as well as public health. I have tremendous experience in large disasters and crises, including pandemics, and was the chief medical officer of a number of Fortune 100 companies during the SARS-CoV-1 pandemic in 2003. So I've been looking at this this particular pandemic and this event, as it were, for the past 3 years through a number of different lenses, including not only how it's impacted individuals in terms of the infectious disease of COVID, but really how it impacted the entire country from an economic perspective, a psychosocial perspective, a crisis perspective, and how we've managed this or mismanaged this more more accurately with regard to public health response.
And for those of you, again, that might be listening for the first time, go to our website, rushtoreason.com. There's an entire page there dedicated to Dr. Kelly. A lot of things that she just said a moment ago, the credentials and things are there as well, along with a lot of other links and information that you may be able to use and or share with others. And also on top of that, all of the shows that we have done now, well, all of our shows, period, but all of these Thursday episodes, we typically do an hour every Thursday from the 3 to 4 o'clock hour. All of those, plus a lot of the other specials like this one that we're doing right now, are on there as well. They're cataloged by our producer, Ann. She does a great job of that. So, again, thank you guys all for listening. Dr. Kelly, thank you. Steve, really quick, for those, again, that may be tuning in for the very first time, your credentials as well, sir.
So, by the way, John, I can only stay an hour plus one segment today because I'm out east trying to fix healthcare.
That's fine. Not a problem.
I got to do something. But my background is I've been in healthcare for 36 years, a biomedical engineer initially, an executive for insurance companies, worked for Kaiser, did different stuff, ran for governor of Colorado in 2014 unsuccessfully. I was the state Republican Party chair in Colorado, 15, 16, 17, then was a congressional candidate. With a new healthcare plan, by the way, which Kelly Victory and a bunch of people helped me put together in 2020. And I've been talking to you about innovation now for, it seems like, 5 years now.
It's been a long time, actually. I think it's been more like 7 years that you and I have been together doing things on air. And for those listening, Steve House really was instrumental in getting Dr. Kelly and I together to do what we do on a weekly basis. So, yeah, Steve, I'll honor your time. Anything you need along those lines, just let me know. But guys, let's, you know, let's jump back in really quick. That article, Steve, that you were talking about a moment ago, that it was published this week. You sent it to myself and Dr. Kelly. I read through it. But for those listening, they probably have not. Just instead of, you know, saying, hey, there's the article, what was in it? Where can folks find it? I'll put the link up on our website a little later tonight so folks can read it directly. But what's in that article? What are you talking about?
Well, Russell Blaylock was talking about the truth of what really happened in COVID, right? And one of the things he talked about was, you know, the first time in American history, you know, a president of the United States, governors, mayors, hospital people, federal bureaucrats, they were the ones who were deciding what medical treatments were allowed to be used on patients, and they took it out of the hands of doctors. And, you know, we've seen, you know, people like, you know, Kelly and a group of people that I was involved with Kelly initially when it first came out, were talking about alternative treatments. You know, using things like zinc and vitamin D and ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and all these things because they were potential antivirals to take care of patients when there were no vaccines and there was no solution. So there was all this alternative medicine was being looked at while the federal government was basically telling them, you can't do this, you can't do that. There was a reason why they did it, and Blaylock goes through all the details of things like lockdowns and all the mistakes that were made, but fundamentally, he tells us that healthcare and all the respected scientists who are physicians in this country, people who understand how the human body works, they're scientists at multiple levels. I mean, Kelly's got lots of credentials, as you heard, but them saying to her, and even pharmacy boards, you can't use this drug. I don't care what you think. I don't care how long you practice medicine. I don't care what you know about virals. I don't care, by the way, that you are a true epidemiologist and Dr. Fauci doesn't work on patients. We're going to tell you what to do based on what Dr. Fauci tells us what to do. And that's just flat out wrong. Whether you like Dr. Fauci or not,
that's right.
You have to trust the people who are actually working on patients.
That's right. Dr. Kelly, and you, again, you've, to Steve's point, have been at the, you know, really the other end of this, being told, not that you did this, but being told what to say, what not to say, how to treat, how not to treat. And it's the first time we've talked about this many times on our program here, but that's the one of the first times I can think of in history where the medical community has been told, which is a very scary place to be, by the way, but the medical community has been told, this is what you're going to do as a response, not letting you guys do what's best for each patient individually.
It truly is unprecedented. I've been a physician for more than 30 years. There's never been a time in my lifetime, certainly, where not only were we given directives for how to treat patients algorithmically, not based on individual patient circumstances or what's best for them or personal choice or informed consent or any of the basic tenets of good medical practice. Not only were we told what to do, but we were derided, ridiculed, threatened, censored. I have fellow physicians who were stripped of their medical licenses, have lost their medical, their board certification. You know, we have a fellow physician who was remanded to psychiatric evaluation for having the audacity to recommend hydroxychloroquine. Psychiatric evaluation. This is a la the Soviet Union in the 1950s. These are tactics that were applied to physicians unprecedented in this country, and it's absolutely reprehensible. As scary as it has been, and it has been scary for me and my fellow physicians who have dared to speak out, but as scary as it is for me, it should be more scaring by double to patients, because from a patient's perspective, how the heck can you trust anything a physician says if they are under, you know, if they have got a gun to their head to be and are being told, as in the state of California, who's now passed this law 2098, which fundamentally criminalizes a physician saying anything against the prevailing narrative, the party line. So if you're a patient, you go in, you've got to wonder now, is, you know, is Dr. Rush saying what he's saying because he truly believes that's what's best for me? That's what the literature shows. That's what the research would indicate. Or is he saying it because he's got to pay his mortgage and he's afraid he's going to lose his medical license?
Great point. Great point. Well, and you guys know me. I'm a car guy. And for those of you listening, I am not in the medical world at all like Dr. Kelly and Steve are. I come from a totally different background. But I come from a background, and Steve, you know this probably as well as Dr. Kelly. I come from a background where you do have to critically think. You do have to think on your feet and respond to things in a manner as such that would take care of that particular situation by the best means possible. And I mean that in regards to fixing vehicles and things along those lines. And again, Dr. Kelly, I don't want to, you know, compare the human body to a car. In fact, if anything, it is far, far, far more complex fixing somebody's body as it is somebody's vehicle. But I will tell you that there is more than one way to skin a cat when you fix a vehicle. How would that not be the same in fixing somebody's body?
It precisely. And the reality is that it is a cornerstone of medicine to give and obtain informed consent to a patient. Furthermore, we have, you know, a long and storied history of refusing to force people against their will to mandate them, coerce them, or otherwise, you know, get them to do something for fear of reprisal to participate in an experiment. These medications that have been launched just in the past 2 years with minimal testing behind them, things like molnupiravir, remdesivir, those sorts of things, and God only knows these vaccines, are experimental. Mm-hmm. They have not been fully tested. Yeah. They are only being used under emergency use authorization. The idea that we are mandating that people participate in an experiment is an absolute violation of the Nuremberg Code.
Yeah. Yep. Steve, you and I have talked about this even long before Dr. Kelly came along. She's done nothing but add to what you and I even started talking about. And for those listening, even first-time listeners, Steve, you and I, at the very onset of COVID, after we did the 2 weeks slow the spread, we started realizing what was happening. You and I started analyzing data. Literally, we would text back and forth on a daily basis almost in regards to the data we were seeing and what was going on. And it was really plain, to me anyways, on the front side, that was COVID real? Yes. Was it being overblown? Absolutely. Did we handle the response to this in all of the wrong ways? 1,000%, because the data didn't back up, Steve, what we did in response.
No, it did not. And part of what Blaylock said, which I thought was really relevant to what you just said, John, is, you know, he cites Peter McCullough, right? I mean, you know, Kelly knows Peter personally, and you know, he's a guy that you see on TV. He's an epidemiologist. He's a cardiologist. He's one of the most published physicians in the country on anything. He treats 2,000 people. He comes up with early protocols that really reduce, you know, the effects of COVID. And they just make this guy, they viciously attack this guy as if he's somehow a quack.
He's like Dr. Evil almost, you know, Steve, literally. Evil. Like he's some sort of evil doctor that's out to ruin people's lives, when in fact it was just the opposite.
I know, and you know, take the guy, Mike Yaden, I think was the chief scientist of Pfizer, a senior VP, who said the vaccines were dangerous from the beginning, and they basically put this guy in a box and called him everything from, you know, soup to nuts, and made him ineffective at really talking to anybody. But many scientists said, just like Kelly said, these vaccines were dangerous. When you start doing that to people, that's the kind of propaganda we've seen in communist regimes of the past.
That's right.
It's amazing that we've gotten this far with people not being vaccinated the way we are today.
All right, folks, hang tight. We're going to come right back. We'll take a quick break again. We're going to have Dr. Kelly all the way for these full 2 hours. Steve will join us for this entire hour and then a segment into the next hour as well. If you've got a question, feel free to text us, 307-200-8222. You can go to our website, send an email as well, but texting is much, much faster as I'm live on air and not able to actually, you know, juggle everything at once, including emails. So if you want to, you know, if you want me to ask a question of them, please text me. Again, 307-200-8222. And Dr. Kelly and Steve House are both very gracious in answering things even after the fact. So if you're listening to this as a replay, please, you are more than welcome to text me and I'll get that answer to you as well.
No liberal media bias here. This is Rush to Reason.
We are back. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory and Steve House with us. And really quick, Dr. Kelly, you heard me say this, and I really did mean that, because it's something that really I haven't even talked much about during this hour with either you or Steve, and that is all of the different companies we have that sponsor not only Rush to Reason, but make sure that we're on air to do what we do every Thursday. You know, a lot of those folks, there's, because this has happened across the country, there's a lot of those types of businesses, Dr. Kelly, where knowing what they know and knowing what it's like to be sort of on your side of the aisle would pull away, not even want to be a part of what we do here. And I meant what I said earlier. Every one of these sponsors makes sure that we're here each and every week to talk about what we talk about. And I will be the first to say, I don't think I thank them near enough.
Well, I appreciate, you know, what you're saying here. It is, the reality is so many people, and I hold my fellow physicians really accountable for their participation in this debacle, John, because the reality is this, we have an obligation to do the right thing, to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. We will not participate in this. My fellow physicians, frankly, have been lazy, intellectually dishonest, incurious. They have gone along with the flow. They've gone along. They get along. And that is really not acceptable in my book. It was time for, we would never be where we are right now if other people, my colleagues, had stood up and said, this is ridiculous. Mm. We never give vaccines or treatments to people to whom they've never been tested. Or on, you know, we never, you know, roll things out without adequate safety data. We never would apply, wear masks, stop the spread of a respiratory illness. We would never apply a lockdown because we've known for decades that they do far more harm than good. And social distancing is a made-up construct.
Yeah.
If people had been honest about it and said that, we would not be where we are in November of 2022. And now all of a sudden, there are more and more people who are kind of waking up and seeing the light.
Yep.
Well, you know, it's a day late and a dollar short.
That's right.
It really is. There are certain people trying to get on the right side of history. And there was just recently an article, I can't remember if it was in the Wall Street Journal, that suggesting amnesty for all the people who participated in this, saying, okay, well, you know, yeah, it happened and it was wrong, but, you know, let's just let bygones be bygones. No, we need accountability.
Yep.
The only way this doesn't happen again is if there's accountability.
Yep.
And if we hold people accountable and say, what you did was a violation of ethics, was a violation of morality, it was a violation of the Nuremberg Code. Anthony Fauci, you lied. You lied about your participation in gain of function. You know, and on and on and on. I could go on for an hour just on those issues. So without accountability, we are doomed to have this happen again.
Steve, it's funny what Dr. Kelly said a moment ago. I get, you know, tons and tons of press requests for folks to come on air. One of those of late being exactly what Dr. Kelly just said a moment ago. There's folks that want to come on and promote this amnesty that she was just referring to a moment ago. Needless to say, as you know, not going to have those sorts of interviews and have those conversations unless I get to say what I want to say, which typically once they realize who I am, that doesn't end up happening anyways. But Steve, again, I'm not trying to, you know, pump up our sponsors in a big way, but really I am, because without them, we don't get to do this. And there's a lot of sponsors out there. We've seen it happen all over the country, all over the world, where they've pulled back from anybody like Kelly saying what she's saying.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple points here to make, John. One is, we know that the vaccine companies, Pfizer, Moderna, and others, spent $6.56 billion along with states on advertising in 2021 for vaccines.
Yep.
So, you know, that's where advertisers come in, right? They enable things happening. Obviously, there's massive quantities of money dished out to hospitals for people going on respirators. And early on, we knew that respirators were not the right answer. Kelly left off two on my list. One is, when do we vaccinate people who've already had the virus, right? I mean, that's
never
something that really
exactly.
You know,
yeah, good one.
Exactly.
Good one.
And vaccine immunity from this virus, in fact, looks like it's lifelong. I was just tested after a year and a half, almost 2 years since I had it. And I was just test, and I still have active antibodies against it, having never been vaccinated. So we know that that's real. The other one is, when does a doctor stick anything in a patient's arm and a needle when they haven't looked at their risk profile?
Right.
You know, what is the risk? You know what? There's no deaths 20 and under in many states in the country, but yet we're locking down kids. We're putting masks on them. RSV may be actually expanding right now because of all the masking we did. There's all these things we did that just don't make scientific sense. And you're right about the advertisers. They either enable good or, quite frankly, some of what happened with pharma advertising probably pushed the governments themselves and hospitals to do things they just shouldn't have done. And, yeah, there needs to be accountability.
You are correct. Really quick, I want to shift gears for just a second because I think this is really, really important as well. Given what's happened this week with FTX, given the fact that we know it's a big, huge money laundering Ponzi scheme that funneled money into the DNC along with a lot of other individual candidates, including the big guy himself. On top of that, though, Dr. Kelly, they were the prime sponsor of a leading study that, quote unquote, proved ivermectin was ineffective. Now, this is coming from what's now going to be going down as the biggest Ponzi scheme ever to hit the United States soil, or probably worldwide soil for that matter. And yet this is the leading funder, quote unquote, of this proven ivermectin study.
Absolutely. And that's where I was going to go next. This isn't just, you know, the government being in cahoots with the medical industry. This is big pharma and big money controlling the medical journals. That's what people need to understand. The big medical journals, the Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, you know, BMJ, all of these big journals, the ones that are the most well respected, they set the tone. They set the standard for what happens in medicine. And when they are owned by outside forces,
yep,
big pharma in particular, and these Ponzi schemes, big money laundering services like FTX, then there's nothing coming out of the journals that you can trust. This is a huge issue. So, yes, FTX funded this trial called the Together Trial, which was one of the big five trials putting essentially the kibosh on ivermectin. Falsely, by the way, it was a corrupted study. It was designed to fail. It was heavily flawed. It had money behind it, was big pharma money behind it saying, prove, quote unquote, that ivermectin doesn't work. That one, along with the Active Six trial, which was the final nail in the coffin for ivermectin, again, a highly, highly flawed study conducted, quote unquote, by a bunch of scientists, quote unquote, who are essentially shills for big pharma. Mm. This is a sham. It's
yep.
corrupt.
Yep.
It is propaganda a la Soviet Union. And we need to blow this thing wide open.
I agree. Steve, along those lines, not only did everything that Dr. Kelly say happen, but remember, on top of that, we had individuals being accused, literally, of using, you know, horse medicine to cure COVID, and on down the line we go. By the way, none of that was exactly the way it was working. Yeah, there was a few knuckleheads running around going to the vet, getting some things along those lines. But all in all, that's not how that was done. It was not the treatments that McCullough and others were doing, Dr. Kelly herself even. And yet, Steve, a lot of you know, individuals got really labeled as complete whack jobs. You know, they were making fun of it all over the news media, you know, Saturday Night Live and so on, and yet nothing could have been farther from the truth.
Yeah, in fact, I'd like to defend all the friends I have who are doctors right now by saying a couple things. One is, we're not anti-vaccine. Kelly's not, I'm not, you're not.
No.
What we are is pro-science, right? So when you take the science and you distort it, or like you said in this ivermectin article, you actually publish something that's not true or it's not done right. Keep in mind, by the way, the stats are that more articles have been peer-reviewed on the subject of COVID, on treatment, on vaccine, on risk, than you can imagine in the last 2 years. But 80-some percent of the ones that are critical of the idea that you would have a vaccine that was unproven used have come down. They've taken them down so that you can't actually read the articles. And also remember, the reason why ivermectin was a problem for the vaccine companies is the rules say you can't use an emergency use drug if there is a bioequivalent treatment. And so for the vaccines to come to market as an emergency use, to be protected from liability, you had to have no bioequivalents. And ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and the McCullough protocol and the one that the frontline doctors are using, the ones that Kelly and Pierre Corey and all these guys have been using, those are bioequivalent treatments that help people get better. They would have cost the vaccine companies the right to distribute an emergency use untested vaccine. So that's why they killed all those,
yep,
those things.
That's right. That's right. Dr. Kelly, what do you want to add to that?
Well, it's simply that, I mean, you're exactly right, Steve. And these articles putting the kibosh on whether it was hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, again, to a single one were flawed. They, on top of that, didn't allow anything that actually was a well-run study that proved how effective these medications were. You simply couldn't get them published. Hmm. You know, I have friends who said to me, no one will publish the study. We did this great study showing how effective hydroxychloroquine is at preventing COVID, and no one will publish it. Hmm. So this is really a racket. Just to give people some idea, when I talk about a study being highly flawed, and it's not the fault of the layperson that they can't read the study and pick up on these things. It's not what they're trained to do.
Right.
But, for example, in the most recent, this last article, that I said, the Active 6 trial, they used a fraction of the dose of ivermectin that you should have used. They capped it at a certain number of milligrams, even no matter how obese the patient was. Everybody knows that obese patients are at the greatest risk, but rather than giving them enough of the drug, they said they capped it at way too low a dose. They only gave them the medication for 3 days total. 3 days. Hmm. Nobody gives it a day. That's like, if you had strep throat and got penicillin, you'd take it for 10 days.
Right.
If you get the flu and you take Tamiflu, you take it for 7 to 10 days. If you get remdesivir, 7 days.
Right.
Okay, molnupiravir, 7 days. But they did this study, ivermectin, 3 days. Okay? And then they didn't start the ivermectin until 6 or 7 or more days into the patient's illness.
Hmm.
You know, everybody knows, hopefully, that the more quickly you start the medication. So that study was designed to make it look as if ivermectin didn't work. And then on top of it all, because it was turning out, even with that, underdosing it, using it for a short period of time, starting it too late, at 14 days, which was what they had, that was their end point that they were studying, at 14 days it was looking like ivermectin worked anyway. So what did the researchers do? They said, oh, we're going to change the gut. We didn't mean we wanted to look at the outcome at 14 days. We changed it to 28 days. So in the middle of the study, they changed their guidelines from 14 days, because if they stuck with 14 days, it would have, told the truth that ivermectin was highly effective. These are the sorts of tactics that the average lay person can't possibly be expected to understand when they look at a study,
yep,
or they hear in the mainstream media just the highlights, quote unquote, and the average physician is too lazy to actually do the work to read it.
Great stopping point. We'll come right back, guys. Again, Dr. Kelly Victory with the Steve House as well. If you have questions, which we'll get to, and a lot of you are still texting in, trust me, we will get to those questions. We've got another full hour after this hour with Dr. Kelly Victory. Steve will stay another segment in that second hour as well. So if you have a question, please, and I'll categorize these accordingly, knowing Steve has to leave a little earlier in the second hour. So if you have a question, 307-200-8222. All right, we are back. We have a two-hour special today with Dr. Kelly Victory and Steve House with us as well. Our number here, if you ever want to call in, is 303-477-5600. Now, if you want to text us a question while Dr. Kelly and Steve are with us, 307-200-8222 are the numbers. Steve, I want to jump to you really quick. There was another article that went around, the three of us. Sweden, which you and I talked about, and even Kelly did, talked about Sweden and, what they did in response to COVID and so on. And they were sort of the butt of a lot of jokes at one point in time. But as it's turned out, Steve, they're the ones that actually handled things the best.
They've given themselves a competitive advantage worldwide, both from an education point of view as well as an economic point of view, because they didn't shut down. There was never any basis for the lockdowns. I mean, if you go back, the original strategy for lockdown was written by a 14-year-old girl whose father was involved in HHS or in NIH, and they talked about this thing back about 5, 6, 8, 10 years ago, and that's what they used as the basis of figuring out that lockdowns were important. Mm-hmm. We just heard at the G20 summit that one of the heads of state for one of the countries there was talking about a managed lockdown coming again with what they're calling the triple pandemic, which is RSV, flu, and COVID. And they're talking about lockdowns at the G20 summit. I just don't understand why anyone would do that based on the evidence that Sweden provided us.
Dr. Kelly, and you, again, you've talked about this numerous times. We've talked about, the lockdowns until probably there's nothing left to talk to them about. I mean, really, we talked about them all the way through there. And yet, to Steve's point a moment ago, we're still hearing rumors of these. I just don't understand what it takes to get these knuckleheads to understand what really is going on in life. Or is this just part of their master scheme of population control?
Well, first of all, I think they know darn well that these things don't work. We've known for decades that lockdowns do far more harm than good. It's the reason we've never used them in the past. We used them for about 9 days during one of the original Ebola outbreaks in sub-Saharan Africa, and very quickly saw that it was harming many, many more people than it was helping. The idea that we've done it here in the United States on and off for these last 3 years is just inexcusable. Furthermore, Steve's right. The concept of social distancing was born out of a high school student's, science project. It's a made-up construct. It's never before been used. It's absolutely nonsensical, and they know it. Furthermore, they know that masks do nothing to stop the spread of respiratory viruses. They know. It's not that they don't know. It's that they understand that, number one, fear is an incredibly powerful tool and a way to manipulate people. And they know that by employing these different mitigation, quote-unquote, schemes over and over again, lockdown, social distancing, limitations on travel, all of these things, they can control the population. They have gotten people to do things that, honestly, 3 years ago I would have said people would never buy into. They've destroyed people's livelihoods. They've essentially shut down schools and churches and anything that they want to shut down while keeping open big box stores. You know, a big box store stays open while the mom and pop shop gets shut. You know, fast food restaurants stay open while, you know, small family-owned restaurants have to close. Schools get shut down, but marijuana shops and liquor stores stay open. Churches can't be in session, you know, and on and on and on. So you can really see their playbook. They it's very poorly hidden. So I think the reason that they're circling back is because they have found, wow, this is an incredibly powerful tool. We can get people to do lots of things. It meets our agenda with regard to things like climate change and climate control, because if people don't go to work, they don't take mass transit. If you tell them they can't travel, they don't get on airplanes. So you meet that agenda. You can force the the critical race theory agenda at school because you now control everything about the online learning and the modules that kids are seeing all across the country. This meets a lot of goals for them. With regard to population control, I think there's no question, and I would not have said that 3 years ago. But the reality is you have a lot of people from the World Economic Forum leaders on down who fundamentally believe that this planet will only survive if there's a massive decrease in the population. And we are seeing tremendous, really very, very worrisome decreases in birth rates around the planet, particularly in places that are heavily vaccinated. Places that aren't heavily vaccinated for COVID, i.e. India, sub-Saharan Africa, those places are seeing no change in their birth rates, nor are they seeing increases in all-cause mortality or increases in disability claims. Places like the United States, Canada, most of Europe that are heavily vaccinated have seen precipitous declines in birth rate since the beginning of 21, huge increases in all-cause mortality, and monstrous increases in disability claims.
One of the things that always comes up, might as well get it out of the way now, it's not one of our questions today, but Kelly, what you just said just sort of dovetails into it. I'm sure it'll come up at some point, so you might as well get it out of the way now. If someone has been vaccinated, maybe they've been vaccinated more than once, maybe they've been boosted, at the end of the day, is there any way of reversing what happened?
Unfortunately, you cannot unvaccinate yourself. So the best you can hope for, number one, couple things I'd like to, not all vaccine batches were created equally, and that is becoming more and more clear. There's a huge disparity in the adverse events happening batch to batch. There's actually a website called howbadismybatch.com where you can go and enter the website, you enter what vaccine you got and the batch number and see how many, what percentage of adverse events are associated with it. Doesn't mean necessarily that you as an individual are going to have a bad event or that you wouldn't, but it gives you some idea of, you know, what you might want to be looking out for. The best you can do is do everything within your power to enhance your overall health, meaning do the things you should have been doing from the beginning and the things that public health officials should have been preaching from the beginning, like good nutrition, regular exercise, adequate sleep, stress mitigation, supplementing vitamin D and vitamin C and zinc, doing the things that enhance your immune function, and then doing everything you can to be aware of what signs and symptoms you're having. We are seeing huge increases in things like cancers, new onset cancers, autoimmune diseases, neurologic complications, blood clotting. Everyone's talking about myocarditis, clearly a very, very important medical condition, but there are a heck of a lot of other adverse that we are seeing, adverse events that we are seeing independent of those that, of a cardiac nature.
All right. Great stopping point. We'll come right back. Don't go anywhere, folks.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, we are back, kind of ending out this first hour. We have another full hour coming your way. Dr. Kelly Victory, Steve House with us today. And Steve will stay with us another segment in the next hour. Dr. Kelly will be with us through the next hour. Steve, really quick, and I know this maybe is off topic, but I don't think so, because I think this really dovetails into what we're talking about, because in my opinion, this is all a part of the things that we've already been covering. The FBI has now leaked, 1 week after a pivotal election, to the Washington Post, that the regime's raid on Mar-a-Lago was basically a political op. Agents and prosecutors found no discernible business interest in the Mar-a-Lago documents.
Yeah, it's not surprising. I mean, I think, you know, a part of power, the ability to take power. And, you know, there's this thing about, you know, I was in politics, John, and you know that there's people in politics who believe that what they think the world should be, how we should operate and function, is so much better than the way it operates today that people just don't understand. And therefore, they should take power, implement their beliefs, whether that's socialism or, you know, a climate change agenda. They will do anything because they believe so much that what they're doing is right.
Yep.
And that doesn't make it right. It makes it very, very wrong. And I, you know, Kelly talked about a lot of stuff just in the last segment. The one thing I wanted to add was, I don't understand how we could spend $1 trillion on electronic medical records, on health information exchanges in this country, know pretty much in the first month, and Kelly can correct me if I'm wrong about this, who were the people at the greatest risk of dying from COVID, and why we didn't go to those electronic exchanges and the medical records and say, all right, in the state of Colorado, there's 5 million people. There's probably 850,000 of them that are at high risk. We know it by their medical records. Contact their doctors without violating HIPAA and tell them that those people should be isolated. They should be aware. They should know that they're at higher risk. Everybody else, you know, we would have gotten herd immunity. We would have solved this problem. Why did we not use that $1 trillion investment plus to do anything with it? We just ignored it.
Kelly, Dr. Kelly, again, I'll let you answer, but my opinion is we can't control the people in the same way when we do that.
Exactly, because it unfortunately had nothing to do with trying to protect public health. Yep. It really didn't. One of the most egregious errors that was made in this debacle, and that's a long list from which to choose, was acting as if we were all at equivalent risk. As Steve said, we knew from the very, very beginning that COVID presented a significant risk to a relatively small group of people, primarily the elderly and those with a well-defined set of comorbidities, specifically obesity and heart disease and diabetes. But rather than targeting those people, they applied with a broad brush the exact same guidelines to everyone. Part of that is because that has become the norm. We have to have equity in everything.
Yep.
So we have to act as if everyone's at equal risk.
Yep.
And you saw them, by the way, John, trying to do the exact same thing with monkeypox.
Yep.
Let's act as if everyone's at risk from monkeypox when the reality is, unless you are homosexual and having sex with other people, having sex with other men, your risk from monkeypox was fundamentally zero.
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
Same thing. And this again is not, this is not a you know, a politically incorrect statement I'm making. This is a statement of medical fact.
Right.
You know, when you start trying to apply social justice and equity to healthcare, what you're going to end up with is a disaster.
Right.
Everyone is not at equivalent risk for colon cancer either. Everyone isn't at equivalent risk for, you know, diabetes. Everyone is not at equivalent risk for Parkinson's disease. That's the medical reality. And everyone was not at equivalent risk from COVID.
Right.
Yet We didn't use that medical record because it had nothing to do, frankly, with public health. It had to do with controlling the population.
There we go. That's it, folks, for this hour. Stay tuned. We're going to take a really quick break here at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Hour two is next. Keep texting me, 307-200-8222. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. And we are back, hour number two, which in some cases might be hour one, depending upon how you're listening to our replay. We're going to do this again on Thanksgiving Day. So if you're listening to us on Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving. Dr. Kelly Victory with us today, Steve House as well. And for all of you listening, that maybe, again, we may change these hours up. All of Dr. Kelly's information is on the website, rushtoreason.com. She's got her entire page there with all of the different things we talk about. All of our past shows are there, credentials, you name it. It's all there. Dr. Kelly, I want to start with you this hour and go ahead and start into some of these questions that we have gotten. For those of you listening, by the way, text me your questions and I'll get them added to our list, 307-200-8222. So we've talked about this before, and I wanted to get this in while Steve is still with us. And this is this whole topic around blood transfusions, and I've had several listeners. It continues to be a topic where, you know, folks are worried or they've been in a situation where there potentially is a blood transfusion that may be coming their way or they may need one. And there's a lot of, I think, confusion and fear around blood transfusions because as far as I'm concerned, I think Dr. Kelly and Steve, you guys would both agree, the blood supply we have right now is contaminated when it comes to virgin, non-vaccinated blood. Am I right?
Well, unfortunately, yes, you are. And I've had concern about this from the very beginning of the vaccine rollout because it was clear pretty early on that the Red Cross and hospitals were not differentiating between blood that was obtained from persons who were vaccinated for COVID and those who weren't. And the concern is that these spike proteins, which are floating around in the bloodstream of vaccinated people, are highly toxic. We know that they are toxic in their own right to different tissues and result in a lot of things, including blood clotting risk. So, yes, the blood supply was not been protected. That said, we still don't know because the studies were never haven't been run. We haven't done any studies to show, you know, what happens to the spike proteins in blood that is taken for transfusion. Do they precipitate out? Do they, you know, do they coagulate? Do they end up causing the same sorts of issues in the person who receives the transfusion as they would if they were native proteins produced by that individual, and on and on. So the answer is that, yes, the blood supply is contaminated, but I cannot say with any certainty what the ultimate risk is because the studies just haven't been done.
Steve, we've talked about this even just you and I together without Dr. Kelly, and again, this is one of those things that I think folks are nervous about, rightfully so, with what Dr. Kelly just said a moment ago. You are more on the admin side of things and can see things even from a different level than, of course, Kelly and I both can. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first and foremost, we just heard from Edward Dowd, a health insurance guru, a life insurance guru, that people between 25 and 44, their all-cause mortality has increased by 40%
Wow.
in 2021-22. So, you know, we're talking about deaths that just aren't predictable. I mean, it's going to kill the life insurance industry
wow.
because there's so many people wow. dying from, you know, sudden adult death syndrome. They made something up to call it that. So I think there's a tremendous amount of risk there. The second thing is there's been a couple of studies, and Kelly, you've probably seen these too, that are talking about skin-to-skin contact transfer of spike protein between a vaccinated person and unvaccinated. I don't know how legitimate those are, but certainly when you have the kind of, you know, unexplained deaths at rates of 35-40% higher, you know, this is just such a risk that what would you do to avoid that risk? I mean, that's a big number from 25 to 44.
Yep.
Some of it's myocarditis, but how do you avoid getting the spike protein in your system knowing that some of those things are happening?
Well, with regard to this issue, I'll take the second part first, of vaccine shedding, the idea that vaccinated people somehow are capable of transferring or shedding spike proteins to others. I have to say, of all the things to worry about with these vaccines, and there are many, I have not bought into the vaccine shedding piece, primarily because I just haven't read any compelling research studies that prove it yet. I'm not saying that it can't happen, but I don't understand the method through which it's happening. I mean, you're not, what are you, like, exuding them through your skin? Are you exhaling them? Are they supposedly coming out in you know, saliva and blood and semen? What is the process through which you are supposedly shedding them? It has not been made clear to me, so I am not buying into that as yet. With regard to the issues, and we've known now, since, you know, the CEO of one of the largest life insurance companies produced this data back in, you know, a year ago now, in January, came out and said that there's a 40% increase in all-cause mortality, and they're freaking out because they're life insurers, and they don't think they can pay out the claims for all these people who are dying.
It wasn't a part of their original actuaries at all.
Yes, and then it turned out it wasn't just a single company. It's been replicated by all the major life insurers. But we add on that, as I said, these very, very concerning decreases in birth rates around the world. Then you look at the disability claims are up 300%. When you add all of this together, and no one is looking at it, the reality is this. We had enough data, enough concerning adverse event data, including death, that were potentially associated with COVID vaccines by the end of January of 2021. By the end of the first month, we had over 1,000 potential associated deaths. The vaccine should have been pulled at that time.
Yeah.
If you go back to 1976 with the swine flu vaccine, that vaccine was pulled from the market after there were 25 potential associated deaths. Now, fast forward to COVID, we had well over 1,000 in the first 4 weeks, yet they turned a blind eye and they just kept pushing them. Here we are now, November of 2022, they are still out there saying safe and effective, when we don't have any idea. First of all, we know they're not effective.
Right.
And all the vaccine manufacturers, the CDC, the FDA, all acknowledge that the vaccines, quote unquote, do not stop you from contracting COVID, and they don't stop you from spreading it to others. So the only remaining claim that they have had is that the vaccines decrease your risk of serious illness, hospitalization, or death. Yet there isn't a single study that actually bears that out.
Right.
So from the people who have been pushing, follow the science, I would say, where's the science? You had one remaining claim that you keep making over and over again, yet you have not produced a single study to back that up.
Yep.
So I think that truly these things should have been pulled from the market. I think ultimately we're now starting to see the very first criminal lawsuits being filed. Switzerland just filed a class action lawsuit against SwissMedic, which is essentially their regulatory body, would be similar to suing the FDA in the United States. They have sued them for criminal negligence and said that these vaccines are the greatest threat to humanity that has ever occurred in history.
Wow, that's huge. It really is huge.
Yeah.
Dr. Kelly, one thing, too, that, and this, again, is another one that continues to come up, and I think there's still some confusion around it, and this might even be a, I want to get this one in while Steve's with us as well. If somebody were, you know, going to have an operation, they wanted to make sure they had some of their own blood banked just to make sure if anything were to happen, they've got that handled. Is that something that can be done? Do hospitals do that? Is there a protocol for that? Is that something they don't do, period? How would somebody go about doing that, Dr. Kelly?
We've talked about this in the past, and there's no great answer, John. First of all, you could only do it if you were doing it well in advance of a scheduled surgery.
Okay.
You know, so in most elective surgeries, you know, you're going to have a hysterectomy or your gallbladder out or even open heart surgery. Those surgeries are generally not associated with the need to get a blood transfusion. It's the unexpected surgeries when
right.
you have a trauma
right.
Or something like that, when you are likely to end up with something where you have extensive bleeding during the surgery and therefore would need a transfusion. And those are ones you can't predict. So you're in a little bit of a pickle. If you're going in to get your knee replaced or have a hysterectomy, you're going to lose a de minimis amount of blood and you're not going to need a transfusion anyway. So if you had some reason to think that you were going to have a procedure where you might need blood, you would need to go in and request from the hospital, and many hospitals do this. You would have to request ahead of time that you would like to bank a unit of blood in advance, and when I say in advance, it would have to be greater than 6 weeks, greater than 42 days in advance of your surgery, you would go in, bank a unit of blood. The other option, or another option, is if you know your blood type and you have others in your family who have the same blood type, they would be in a position. So you could indicate, if I were to need blood, I would like to, you know, have blood from somebody who has in my known family, and therefore you could perhaps do it more closely related to the actual surgery.
Steve, before you leave, and this is something that, again, kind of goes into you and I, you know, talking on the business side and technology and so on, why hasn't anybody yet, because I could see down the road this being a huge business opportunity to have blood banks of quote-unquote virgin blood, never tainted, never vaccinated, and so on. Am I thinking way out of the box, and is that never going to happen, or am I thinking that that could actually be somebody that, you know, something that happens and people make money off of?
I certainly think that it's a business opportunity that could be potentially there, probably a couple of years down the line. I mean, I think we have to see more and more evidence of what's really happening with regards to the spike protein and all the different, we know today, we've seen plenty of examples, as Kelly's, you know, brought up about cancer rates and 143,000% increase in cancer, you know, rates in the U.S. or places that have been vaccinated. All those things are an issue. So it may become an issue down the line. I don't know if it's there quite yet, but there's something else you need to think about that you said earlier, John, in the conversation we started in the first hour, which is there are people who are trying to get people to agree that we should give amnesty to people who have made significant mistakes and want to be held accountable. So just 1 second on this. The only reason you give somebody amnesty is because they admit that they did something significantly wrong.
Right.
Right? So we have that. We have the vaccine companies admitting they never tested the vaccine to prevent transmission, yet they sold it to people worldwide on the idea that if you don't get it, you're a heartless individual because you're risking people getting the virus from you, but yet the vaccine didn't stop transmission. And there's a many, many other things you could list. You know, the source of it wasn't really the wet market. I mean, there were all these lies and the need for amnesty. Why would anyone believe a commercial from a government or from a vaccine manufacturer that it's a safe and effective vaccine?
Hmm.
Why do you need amnesty if this stuff didn't happen? I don't get it.
And great point.
We have to focus on that, and people need to realize before they trust somebody on these vaccines and on the whole situation, there's no reason you need amnesty if something really wrong didn't happen, and obviously it did.
That's right. Steve, I'll let you go. I know that you said you'd stay through the first segment, which is where we're at. I appreciate you very much, sir.
Thanks, guys. Thanks,
You're very welcome. Appreciate it. Dr. Kelly and myself, we will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Putting reason into your afternoon drive. This is John Rush.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory with us. And next question, Dr. Kelly, because this one does go along with what we just talked about a moment ago. This listener says, I have I'm not going to pronounce this one right. Chromatosis? Am I saying that right?
And give
blood every 3 weeks. Can I have them each time hold it in my name?
Well, it doesn't last forever is the issue. I mean, blood expires, and generally, they might be willing to hold a unit of blood if you had an upcoming surgery, but it wouldn't make sense to just say, you know, just sort of bank it for me and start stockpiling your own blood. So I think the answer is probably no. Now, it might be different if you had an upcoming surgical procedure and you said to them, you know, I'd like to have you hold this because I know I'm having surgery on this date. It would be different. But otherwise, and I don't think people should be, the reality is most people, fortunately, don't end up needing a blood transfusion. They're primarily associated with the traumatic events, and those you cannot predict. So I think of all the things to be worrying about, that's probably not the top of my list.
Right.
We have so many things that are legitimate to worry about at this point. And I'm not saying that there isn't concern there, because there is. And I've been sounding the alarm about the blood supply issue from the beginning.
Right.
I just don't think there's a great fix to it. And I think there are other things that we should be working on right now, including the fact, again, that people should focus on the things that they can impact.
Right.
I see, you know, people constantly worried about some of these things, and I'm thinking, you know, and again, this is not a criticism or a shaming, but I look at my, you know, friends and colleagues who still have weight issues, who still have obesity.
They're still smoking.
The primary risk factor. They're still smoking. They're not getting exercise. They eat horribly. They drink in excess, or they don't get adequate sleep.
Right.
Those sorts of things. I'm thinking, address the things that are right in front of you.
Right.
You can worry all day long about the blood supply, and you can worry about whether the person on the bus is shedding their spike proteins on you. You know, these are all things. But let's focus. And
yep.
I know it's uncomfortable, but let's focus on the things that might take a little hard work on your part,
right.
but you really can make an impact on.
That's right.
You can say, I am going to honestly get on a vitamin supplement routine. I'm going to follow this advice, and I'm going to start supplementing vitamin D. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do this. I'm going to work hard on the basics, eating, you know, more fruits and vegetables, or taking a 3-mile walk every day, or whatever it is for you. And focus on those things, because people get so far into the trench, so far down into the weeds, John, on worrying about some of these yep. other things that we're making ourselves crazy. You know, I had all these people worried about monkeypox and worried about, you know, RSV. And you know, let's worry about the things that you can actually impact, because there are a lot of them and they make a difference. So that's really where I would direct people at this
yep.
point. And, you know, November of 2022, my advice going into this holiday season is try to worry less about those things that you can't change. If you got vaccinated, okay, chalk it up. You
yep,
did.
You're done.
You had your
That's
own
right.
reasons for Well, you had your reasons for doing it, and many of them may have been good ones. I have many, many friends and family members who did it because they needed to keep their jobs. If not, they knew it. They didn't want to do it.
Yep.
I felt badly for them. They were coerced or mandated to do it. Whatever your reasons were, okay, you know, you can only you know if it was right for you.
Right.
At this point, focus on those things that you can do that you can change. Focus on where you can make an impact on your own health and wellness and your ability to get through this.
Next question. If ivermectin is also considered an antiviral, will it be effective for shingles? My 14-year-old daughter just came down with it. She's not vaxxed with the COVID vaccine. Will it work better than Valtrex? So she got chickenpox vaccine. I guess still has shingles, which is a form of chickenpox to my knowledge, but she did not get the COVID shot. Thoughts?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no. You are correct. Ivermectin is an antiviral, but I would. We have better antivirals for shingles, which is a herpes virus. So Valtrex is specifically an antiviral for that particular virus,
okay.
for the herpes family of viruses. So it's a good question. Ivermectin has broad antiviral properties, but I would never take that over Valtrex, because Valtrex is targeted specifically to that family of viruses.
Okay. Makes total sense. Let's see if I can squeeze one more in. Any hesitation on people getting the flu shot this year, especially if they're elderly, because we've heard that the flu shot can be pretty potent? Is that a problem for people, and what should they do there?
You know, you really have to follow, you know, your own medical you need to know your own medical background. I have concerns about people getting the flu and RSV this year for two reasons. Number one, because many people's immune systems, particularly children, have been suppressed
yes.
by virtue of the lockdown.
Yes.
The immune system is kind of like a muscle. If you don't exercise it regularly, it becomes fat and lazy. And that's what's happened with the immune systems for many children. They've become senescent. If you become the boy in the bubble, meaning that you never come in contact with any germs or any pathogens, your immune system sort of goes to sleep. When you add that on top of the immunosuppressive effect of the COVID vaccines, and we know that they suppress the immune system, we know that people who are multiply vaccinated with COVID shots do not mount the expected immune response when they come into contact with COVID in the future. And that's why you have actually an increased risk of contracting COVID following the third shot compared to people who were never vaccinated at all. So my concern is, while we know that they're at higher risk for contracting COVID, we don't know what's going to happen when heavily vaccinated people come into contact with influenza, for example.
Right.
Are they going to have a worse go of it? So it's a bit of an unknown. I am recommending that people who have gotten influenza vaccines in the past that they get those vaccines as they normally would.
Okay.
I do not get vaccinated personally for influenza. I am of an age and a health status that I feel that I am better off facing the risk of influenza than in getting vaccinated with a vaccine that, you know, may at best be about 60% effective and in most years is closer to 40%. And I'd rather save my influenza vaccination for when I get older have perhaps
right.
other underlying medical conditions. And so I don't do it. But I'm recommending that if you routinely get an influenza shot, I don't think there's any reason this year that you shouldn't.
Perfect. All right, folks, any other questions, text us 307-200-8222. We got about 30 minutes or so left of Dr. Kelly Victory as all. So if you've got a question, please let us know. I'll add it to the list. All right, we are back. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. All right, Dr. Kelly, here is a question, and we've got this one from time to time as well. Had COVID a year ago. Now some foods and drinks have a metallic taste. Can I get that to go away?
Yeah, it's interesting. The loss of sense of taste and smell or the disruption of them is a very disconcerting symptom. It is not specific to COVID. It happens with other viral infections as well, but was very, very common with COVID. It's actually an attack, believe it or not on your taste buds. It's really the olfactory nerve. It's really an attack of the virus on the nerve that controls smell, but smell is so closely associated with taste that it impacts your, you believe that it's actually affecting the taste buds, but it does in fact impact your olfactory nerve. The good news is the olfactory nerve is the only one of the cranial nerves that is capable of regenerating. So it can get repaired from that damage, but it takes time and a lot of time in some people. The only thing that I know specifically that can enhance that repair is supplementing zinc if you aren't already doing it. We know that zinc deficiency is associated with prolonged symptoms of loss of sense of taste and smell. So if you're not already taking zinc, I would recommend that you do take a moderate dose of zinc for some weeks and see if that helps. Otherwise, unfortunately, it's a tincture of time. Most people, the good news is for most people, it ultimately returns to normal, but it is, and I feel for you because it is a really disconcerting symptom, as I said.
Okay. A question came in via phone. Can animals get COVID? And if so, can that transfer go back and forth? There's also really quick a question on rabies, which I can answer. Rabies shots are typically required by the county you live in. Look up the law in your county. It'll tell you how often you're supposed to have rabies, but typically it's an annual situation that you have to have. In some cases, maybe biannual, but look up your local regs and it'll tell you on the rabies side. But on the animals and COVID, what are your thoughts, Dr. Kelly?
Yeah, well, coronaviruses, by definition, are zoonotic. They can jump from species to species, and that was the basis, that the wet market theory came up, because coronaviruses can go from different species to humans and back again. COVID-19 specifically has been reported in a number of different animals, although I think the veracity of those reports is somewhat in question, meaning, I don't know how they proved that the zebra or the dog or the whatever in the zoo, I think at one point it was rhinoceros or something at some zoo supposedly had COVID. We certainly haven't had significant reports of it going back and forth from humans to animals, but by definition, it is zoonotic, so it is potentially possible.
Okay. All right. Hair loss when it comes to COVID, is that something that has been happening? If so, how do you reverse it? And again, not from the vaccine itself, but, I've got family members even that had COVID and they claimed, even during that or shortly after hair loss, in some cases it didn't happen until months after. Is that something else or can that be related to COVID?
Very, very common. Very common not only with COVID, by the way, but with any severe viral illness and, frankly, with any severe illness.
Okay.
Hair is a great, it's a trailing indicator, meaning it happens after the fact, but it is an indicator of significant bodily stress. When I say stress, I don't mean necessarily psychological stress. It can be physical stress.
Okay.
We first saw it, interestingly, in fighter pilots returning from the Second World War. After they were back, two or three months after they returned and were now supposedly sort of at rest and at peace and not in a war scenario, they started losing their hair. And we realized that it was a response to significant prolonged stress. Many women will lose hair following childbirth after a long pregnancy. People will have hair loss following big traumas, meaning, you know, a physical trauma, a car accident or something that lands them in the hospital for a long period of time. And without question, severe illnesses, infectious diseases, whether it's a severe bout of influenza or in this case COVID, absolutely you can suffer from hair loss. The great part of this is that it is almost entirely, almost 100% reversible. Okay. It stops on its own. You will not go bald with exceedingly rare exception. So it's just a matter, again, of your body's reaction to a huge stress that it underwent. And just go along with your business and your hair will stop falling out.
And by the way, that was something I already had on my list. We got a question on it a moment ago as well. So we got that one handled. That worked out very well. So for those of you listening that just sent that in, there was your answer. All right. Somebody said, I read that Colorado has experimental mRNA shots for flu, new RSV, and other shots. Is this true?
Well, they've been working for a long time on coming up with a combined vaccine for influenza and COVID. They've been talking about that. They're very, very excited. Now, I've said from the very beginning that much of the fervor about rolling out these COVID vaccines is because I believe they want to make mRNA a household word. They want people to believe that mRNA is the panacea.
It's a cure-all.
Exactly. That is the perfect thing, is the perfect vehicle for an influenza vaccine, for treatment for heart damage, you know, now as a treatment for RSV. You can, now I'm reading about we're going to have a vaccine to prevent opiate addiction and on and on. So at this point, you know, again, I am not anti-vaccine at all. I'm extraordinarily pro-vaccine. What I have is concerns about rushing any therapeutic to market before it's been adequately tested. I'm pro-science. I'm pro-safety. So I wouldn't roll out a heart medication or an antibiotic or a chemotherapy agent either, you know, in a matter of months with zero safety data behind it.
Right.
So all of these vaccines need to go through the rigorous testing. Unfortunately, that generally means 8 to 10 years of testing, because that's how long it takes to fully understand what the response of the immune system is going to be. Many times, John, we don't know that something is going to react the way that it does, particularly when it comes to the immune system, for some years. And so unless we need time to figure out what are the long-term impacts of any particular treatment on fertility, on autoimmune diseases, on the immune system in general, on neurologic development, and so forth. So, yes, people are working on these. None of them have received emergency use authorization, and there would be no rationale for doing that. So they are working on combined influenza and COVID vaccines. They're working on mRNA therapies, not just vaccines for infectious diseases, but as I said, as treatments for cancer, for heart injury, for opiate addiction, and a number of other things, but none of them are commercially available at this point.
Okay. Last one before we go to our next break. My dad did a D-dimer. Am I saying that right? D-dimer test.
Yes.
Came back positive. How good is the test, and is there more blood tests that he should do? His back started hurting right after that test. Can that have anything to do with the blood clot? I know this is not really COVID-related, but...
Well, the D-dimer test is an extraordinarily sensitive test that looks for evidence of blood clotting.
Okay.
So I have no idea why he had that test done. I don't know why he was looking for clotting, if it was related to COVID vaccines, or related to something else.
Okay.
But the answer to the question is it exceedingly sensitive? So if the D-dimer test is positive, then he's having a clotting issue somewhere.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'm tying in the relationship to the back pain, if that's why he got the test in the first place, or if they're asking if he got back pain from having a blood test. I'm not following.
No, I don't
that
either, but I can tell you that depending upon where the clot's at and where it's located in his body and so on, can it cause pain? Yeah, absolutely can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm not a doctor, but I know that much.
Right. Exactly. And tangential to this question, I would say that the doctors who were following, and many of my colleagues were doing routinely doing D-dimer tests in patients following vaccination, we're seeing a massive increase in positive tests, meaning people were getting vaccinated and their D-dimers would go up in the same way that people get vaccinated and their cardiac enzymes and many times are increasing, which is a you know sign that they are having some element of cardiac damage. So there were many things. All of these are the types of things that should have been, would have been tested for during the prolonged testing period on the vaccines if they'd gone through the routine standard, protracted testing period. But they didn't. So these are things that we, you know, should have been asked and answered. We should have known, you know, what is the impact, for example, on ovulation? What is the impact on menstrual cycles? Yeah. What is the impact on neurologic development? What is the risk of new onset seizures? What is the risk of myocarditis, pericarditis, all of these things? But none of that was tested, and that is what gives me huge concern about these vaccines.
Also noticed today, and again, I don't know how much of this is even true. You see a little news blurb come out. I haven't had a chance to even research it, but evidently, the poster child for childhood vaccines, literally the poster child they used for childhood vaccines, has now passed away.
That's correct. I think he's Argentinian, little boy, 4 years old, died suddenly. Sound familiar?
Yes, very much so.
I have not seen a cause of death. I don't know if they have one yet or not, but they have.
And you may never see it, by the way.
I've seen it. Exactly, but certainly four-year-old children don't routinely die suddenly, and we are seeing an awful lot of that with regard to the athletes. You know, for those people who claim that it's just being overreported or that it's sensationalized, there was a very, very well-controlled study done by the International Olympic Committee well before COVID. I think it was conducted in 2009, looking at data from 1988 to 2006 and calculated the number on average of Olympic level or professional level athletes globally who, quote, die suddenly. And the average, and this was the International Olympic Committee, the average was about 29 per year, 29 athletes of that level, professional level athletes die suddenly on an annual basis during that period. And the vast majority of them were found to have previously undiagnosed cardiac issues on autopsy. That was almost all of them. Then fast forward to 2021, we were having upwards of 100, 150 per month.
Wow.
Per month.
Wow.
Dying suddenly. Okay. So we have now had well over, we're now in the, thousands.
Yep.
When the average had been 29 per year. So something's happening. Now, can I say that that's secondary to the vaccine? No. Maybe it's global warming, John. Maybe it's, I don't know what, you figure it out. But the reality is this.
Yeah.
Somebody better start asking the question.
Yep.
And those somebodies, it turns out in the United States, we actually have an agency whose job it is to figure it out. The CDC. There are 40,000 employees at the CDC. Don't you think some of them might have the capacity to form a task force to start looking at what the heck is causing this massive increase in died suddenly in professional level athletes? I think that's sort of a compelling question.
I agree. And here's the answer. And as you know, Dr. Kelly, only if they want to. Problem is, they don't want to.
Exactly. And so that's where, people say, well, you can't say that's the vaccine. I say, okay, great.
Prove it's not.
Open to other ideas.
Right.
I'm open to other ideas. But why is somebody not looking at, why aren't they asking the question?
That's right.
When somebody isn't absolutely apoplectic and up at arms and raising the alarm bells and saying, holy hell, we have something very, very bad going on here, then I think I have a right and everyone has a right to ask, why aren't you concerned about that? Because that sounds pretty darn concerning to me.
Agree. Great stopping point. We'll come right back, folks. Again, Dr. Kelly Victory, any questions, keep texting him. We've got another segment left with her. We can ask more questions and get them answered. 307-200-8222. All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory with us today. And again, you can go to rushtoreason.com and look at all of her credentials, and all of our past shows and things are there as well. Dr. Kelly, in the first hour, you talked about a website, which first time I had heard of it, so I'm glad you did. I put it in our notes. Howbadismybatch.com. I thought for some of those folks, maybe they didn't get a chance to hear that first hour. What is that website and what does that tell folks?
Yeah, what it is you can actually go in and enter the lot number, the manufacturer, meaning Moderna, J&J, Pfizer, and then the lot number of your vaccine, which is available on your vaccine card that you got, and it will tell you how many adverse events have been reported. Doesn't mean it's all the ones that have happened, but it'll tell you how many have been reported in that batch.
Okay.
It turns out that about 80% of the adverse events that we are seeing, which is everything from blood clots to heart attacks, strokes, you know, neurologic issues, death, about 80% of them seem to be associated with 20% of the total lots of vaccine,
okay.
Meaning that the lots are not all equivalent in terms of the adverse events. That, you know, is very concerning in its own right, because anybody knows if you've been involved in manufacturing, you shouldn't have that type of discrepancy. It means that either there was very, very poor quality control in the manufacturing process, or that something else,
or they changed the formula or something along those lines.
They changed something else very nefarious. And
right.
On. They changed something. They changed the formulation, or they sent different types of batch, and they're totally different. That one batch is a completely different thing than another. I mean, I don't have a good explanation for it, but that's what the website's about. So it might be worth going and taking a look.
All right. Please ask Dr. Kelly. We take a zinc, quercetin, and a multivitamin. The multivitamin has 100% of the recommended C and D. What else do we need?
I'm sorry, what are the things that they're taking? Repeat the...
Zinc, quercetin, and a multivitamin. The multivitamin has 100% of the recommended C and D. What else do they need?
Yeah, I think, well, I think those are the basics. As long as you're getting enough vitamin D, we know that vitamin D deficiency is always been associated with a bad outcome or worse disease with COVID. And vitamin D deficiency is very, very common in the U.S. More than 80% of Black people, 50% of Latinos, and upwards of 30% of Caucasians are vitamin D deficient. So supplementing vitamin D is very important. Zinc is a great antiviral, not just for COVID, but for all things. So, you know, we're entering cold and flu season, so it makes sense to be supplementing that. Quercetin is great because it helps to drive zinc into the cells, where it can do its work. Otherwise, zinc has a hard time actually getting intracellular. There are lots of other things you could be taking. You know, there comes a point when there's just so many supplements you can take. Many people take N-acetylcysteine, which is called NAC, NAC. There are people supplementing selenium. All of these are good ideas, but at some point, I'm a big proponent of once you're supplementing zinc, vitamin D, and C, taking some quercetin to help the zinc get into the cells, then I really recommend people focus more on diet and less on taking a handful of pills.
Okay.
We eat such a lousy diet in this country.
Agree.
You know, even and I fall prey to it too.
Listen, yeah, we all do.
Travel every single
That's right,
week.
We all do.
You know,
it takes work.
Running through Denver Airport, I'll tell you the donuts look a lot tastier than the salads.
Yep.
And so it's tough, but you have to really make a commitment to it and say, I'm going to work on really, really focusing on nutrition, stay out of the fast food places, get out there and take a walk, be in the fresh air, get together with friends and family, have a glass of wine if you enjoy one, and really try to get off the stress train. Man, we have been living just in this quagmire of stress. And again, no one knows it better than I. I mean, it is a stressful time, and you need to take time away, take your dog for a walk, get together with people and laugh, because we're not doing ourselves any good to just constantly be swimming in this, cesspool of stress.
Agreed. Last question. This is mine, actually, which I sort of saved for last, and it has to do with RSV. Is there anything that we can do to keep ourselves from getting RSV? And are certain people at higher, I mean, I know young babies and such are at higher risk, but when it comes to adults, are some people at more risk than others when it comes to RSV, Dr. Kelly?
Again, it's people primarily, as you said, number one, young children are at risk from it, and it is always posed. RSV and influenza have always posed a far higher risk to young people and infants than COVID ever did.
Just because their lungs aren't fully developed and so on, am I thinking correctly?
Yeah, yes, exactly, and that they can, you know, young kids can get quite sick with that.
Okay.
There is not more, in my estimation, there is not more RSV out there this year than in previous years. Absolutely, you know, the elderly and those people with underlying lung issues, asthma, COPD, emphysema, those sorts of things, are always at higher risk from respiratory viruses. The rest of us, I have never in my entire life been concerned about contracting RSV. Just so you know, it is rate zero on my concern factor. I have very little risk about influenza. You know, I might get it, and I don't want to get the flu.
Right.
But if I get it,
right,
I'm going to be sick and feel like, you know,
big deal.
Poorly for 7 to 10 days, and it's not what I want, but I know I can handle it.
Okay.
I don't think people need to be running around worried about RSV at all.
Okay.
It's the same thing as any other respiratory virus. I try to, you know, avoid people who are actively sneezing and coughing in my face.
Sure.
You know, I wash my hands regularly. I use a tissue, to, you know, to cover my mouth and nose when I sneeze if I can. And I stay home from social events if I'm feeling really lousy. The stuff that we always do, common sense things. I really, my personal opinion is that there's no reason to have any more concern about RSV this year than you have in the past.
All right, that does it. Dr. Kelly Victory, thank you. 2 hours goes by really, really fast. If you're listening to one of our replay shows, thank you very much. You can always direct somebody to our website. They can listen there for themselves as well. You can even send links to what we've done in the past or this particular show to your friends and family as well. And if you're listening on Thanksgiving Day, thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving. Dr. Kelly, I'm very thankful for you. You've become a great friend of not only of mine, but the show, many of our listeners, and we are indebted to you beyond measure. There's nothing I can say that would mean enough to really give you the thankfulness we have for you.
Well, thanks for saying that. I appreciate the platform and the opportunity to be here and to talk with your listeners. John, it's been a time of such unbelievable censorship that it's important for people to be able to hear. Feel free to disagree with me. I'm happy to take questions and argue, but I want to argue about the data, about the real science, common sense. Robust, vigorous debate is important, and we need to make this information available to people so they can hear something other than the standard narrative.
I'll let you go. Dr. Kelly, happy Thanksgiving. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
All right, that's it. Again, thank you all for listening very much. We appreciate it. If you're listening to a replay show, thank you for that as well. You can still text us questions, 307-200-8222. And don't forget, you can send anybody our links, how to listen to the show, all the information that we have. It's all in our show notes section on the website, rushtoreason.com.
This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.